The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Your 401k is likely one of your most important assets, but it's only one part of a comprehensive retirement strategy. Edward Jones can help you understand how your retirement assets fit into your entire retirement picture so that you can work toward meeting your unique retirement goals. Contact me, Lee Colvin, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor, in the Public Shopping Center on South Rutherford Boulevard, or give us a call at 615-907-7056. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Looking for great deals on name brand clothing, furniture, and more? Visit the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street across from the tall downtown NHC building in Murfreesboro. Our competitive prices and quality selection make it easy to find exactly what you need. And here's the best part, 100% of your purchase supports Greenhouse Ministries, helping over 70 families a day. When you shop at the Garden Patch, you're not just getting a deal, you're making a difference. The Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street in Murfreesboro.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Seriously looking at solar power generation? MTE offers a free consultation with an energy expert and has an entire library of educational resources. To learn more, visit mte.com/prosolar.
A search for truth.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. During today's program, on our Call to Conviction segment, we will review a trial from the past. The trial involves the murder of 83-year-old retired state trooper and Rutherford County resident, General William Jack Raines.
From Call to Conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
At the time of his death, General William Jack Raines was 83 years old. He was a retired state trooper living at home on McFarland Road in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. After retiring, General Raines stayed active in several business ventures. One of his ventures was selling used cars with an associate named Tina Gail Williamson. General Raines had worked hard all of his life and had accumulated a very respectable nest egg. On Saturday, September the 1st, 2007, General Raines was found dead in his home, sitting at the kitchen table. The cause of death was determined to be 5 gunshot wounds to the head. Dr. Fingley, the medical examiner, concluded that General Raines died shortly before or shortly after 12 noon on August 31st, 2007. In processing General Raines' home, officers could not find any evidence of forced entry. They discovered that almost every drawer in the home had been left open. They noted, however, that several items of value were curiously left untouched. The officers also collected several items of evidence from the scene. Included in those items were the boxer shorts that General Raines was wearing at the time of his death. The boxer shorts contained DNA from both General Raines and a then unidentified female. The TBI lab said the DNA evidence would be consistent with General Raines putting on the shorts immediately after engaging in sexual intercourse. The investigation then began to focus on General Raines' relationship with his female business partner, Tina Gail Williamson. Tina Williamson told police that on the day of the murder, that she had not been to Murfreesboro at all that day, and certainly not near General Raines' home. She also denied any romantic relationship with General Raines. The police investigate Tina Williamson's activities on the day of the murder. They discover problems with Tina Williamson's story. They locate witnesses who indicate that Tina Williamson and General Raines did, in fact, have a romantic relationship. The local bank also provided valuable information. Information regarding Tina Williamson's activities at the bank later that afternoon and in the days that followed the murder. Detective Ty Downing also obtained Tina Williamson's cell phone records. He discovered that Tina Williamson had made 3 phone calls on her cell phone around the time of the murder. The phone calls were to one of Tina Williamson's closest friends. One call was made at 11:21 a.m. Another call to the same friend was made at 11:30 a.m. and yet another call at 12:03 p.m. All of the calls were routed through the cell phone tower that was closest to General Raines' home, not from any tower near Woodbury, Tennessee. The detectives now believe they had enough evidence to discredit Tina Williamson's alibi. Additional dramatic evidence was also provided by the person that Tina Williamson called 3 times that day. In December of 2007, Tina Williamson was arrested and charged with the murder and robbery of General Jack Raines. Tina Williamson insisted she was not guilty and continued to say she was not in Murfreesboro that day. The trial of the state of Tennessee versus Tina Gail Williamson began on January 27, 2009. Tina Williamson was represented by attorney Bob Peters from Winchester, Tennessee. The state prosecution team consisted of District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman. The trial was conducted in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and was presided over by the Honorable Judge Don R. Ash. As the trial began, it was obvious that Tina Williamson's defense was the defense of alibi. During the trial, I introduced evidence that totally destroyed Tina Williamson's alibi. The evidence was a tape recording of a phone call between Tina Williamson and the woman who picked Tina Williamson up in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, near the time and the location of the murder, and transported Tina Williamson back to her alibi location in Woodbury, Tennessee. In the phone conversation, the jury heard Tina Williamson tell her friend not to tell the police about picking her up in Murfreesboro and giving her a ride back to Woodbury. Now I will play an edited version of that tape for you.
Hey, the cops call me and they want to set up an appointment to meet me. And I want to know what you want me to tell them and what you want me not to tell them.
The main thing not to tell them is about that ride.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Please don't say that. That puts you in the vicinity and I wasn't nowhere near his house. But that puts me in Murfreesboro.
Okay, I'm going to make sure you... I want to know...
And I thought you were just saying that I was at my house the whole time. If I was, under that short drive, you'd get me and bring me back.
The jury began hearing the case on January 27, 2009, and 7 days later, on February 3, 2009, the trial was completed. The jury found Tina Gail Williamson guilty of first-degree felony murder, guilty of second-degree murder, and guilty of especially aggravated robbery. On the murder charges, the jury sentenced Tina Williamson to life in prison. On the especially aggravated robbery count, Judge Don Ash sentenced Tina Williamson to an additional 20 years to serve at 100%. He further ordered the 20-year sentence to be served consecutively to the life sentence. Tina Williamson was 40 years old at the time of her trial. Under this sentence, society should rest assured that Tina Williamson will never be released from prison. With us today in the WGNS studios is Ty Downing of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. Ty Downing, along with Ralph Mersick, were the lead investigators in this case. Ty, I want to welcome you to the broadcast. And my first question will be, can you tell us some of the names of the many law enforcement officers who were a part of the team that investigated the murder of General Rain?
Actually, it was all of us, General. On any major case such as this one is or was, we all have a role to play. This particular case, Ralph Mersick was the lead detective, and we all had tasks assigned to us by him. And so we all worked together, all the detectives.
This was a very complicated case, and you had to overcome Tina Williamson's assertion that she was not in Murfreesboro on the day of the murder. How would you go about proving that her alibi was not true?
That would have been the task that was assigned to me from Mersick. My task was to gather up phone information. And how I did that was I collected Tina Williamson's cell phone information, which provided calls and times and locations of where those calls were made.
And I understand also that as part of establishing that Tina Williamson was, in fact, in Murfreesboro, you located a Walmart videotape that showed the parking lot and also showed the street of John Bragg Highway. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. From the cell phone records, we had already established that she was, in fact, in Murfreesboro at the time she claimed to be in Woodbury. And it just so happens that there was a cell phone tower near the victim's house. We had a really good idea that she was near the victim's house at the time of his death. We started checking with different businesses for video surveillance and did come up with a video from the Walmart there on Rutherford Boulevard. The particular camera that I was interested in aimed at John Bragg Highway. We actually did get an image of a person being picked up at the time that we believe she was picked up on John Bragg Highway.
You were able to talk to the person who Tina Williamson called three times that day during the time period that very close to the murder. Can you tell us how you were able to get that person to cooperate? I understand that you also got some audio tapes where she helped to record those. Tell us that process and how that came about.
This was a friend of the suspects. They both lived in Woodbury, and I think she just sort of got drug into this, not knowing what it really was. Once we informed her of the allegations against Ms. Williamson, she was obviously willing to help.
Tell us how it was set up or how it was determined that you would do the audio recordings and she would participate.
When I had interviewed the person we're talking about that lives in Woodbury, Ms. Williamson had asked her to lie multiple times about providing a ride for her, and this person just obviously didn't want to be involved in this, and so she was more than willing to help us.
During the interview of Ms. Tina Williamson, she allowed y'all to look inside of her purse, and inside of her purse there was a car title that I believe you were the one found. Tell us the significance of that car title. And what, if anything, of interest that you found on it?
When I was talking to Ms. Williamson, we were talking about her financial status, and she had mentioned that she did not need to steal any money, and that's where we were going with this. And so she actually provided her checkbook to me. As I was taking the checkbook, I opened it up and saw this title in there, and I noticed that the car title belonged to the victim, and it was for his Mercedes. What really jumped out at me was what appeared to be a drop of blood was on the title.
That title was sent to the TBI for testing. What appeared to be blood was determined to actually be blood, and being the blood of who?
The victim.
Several witnesses came forward and helped you in this investigation. One of the principal things you were trying to prove or establish was whether or not she had a romantic relationship with General Rain. How important was it that the public and the friends of General Rain's came forward and helped you to establish that?
It was huge, because the whole time she was telling us that they were just friends and he was more of a father figure to her. once we had established that she was, in fact, lying to us about her romantic relationship, that was just more circumstantial evidence that, quite incriminating.
There was DNA found on the boxer shorts. Of course, part of the DNA was General Raines, and the other part was from an unknown or unidentified female. Those shorts were sent to the TBI lab, and the unidentified female became identified. And whose DNA was that?
The suspect, Miss Williamson.
One of the big questions that everybody has is, why would somebody kill someone that's 83 years old and somebody that they may be in business with and somebody that they may have a romantic relationship? What possible motives did you come up with to explain why this murder occurred?
It was money. She wanted his money and his property.
I remember in General Weitzel's closing argument, he pointed out, and I think this is close to a quote, she had 110,000 reasons to kill General Raines. Apparently, she had a $10,000 bank account that she held jointly with him able to get the money from. And I understand there was a $100,000 CD as well. Is that right?
That's correct.
And did the bank provide you information about her activities trying to get that money?
Yes. What was really suspicious to us was we had already established that the victim was adamant about keeping this one particular account at or above $10,000. It had something to do with the interest that he would earn. If it fell below $10,000, he would not earn interest or something like that. On the day of his murder, what was really suspicious was Ms. Williamson went into the bank and withdrew the money.
Tina Williamson will probably not live long enough to make parole. She should not be eligible for parole until she is probably over 100 years old. In your opinion, does the punishment fit the crime in this case?
Absolutely, it does.
Detective Downing, we want to congratulate you and the other members of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office for bringing this case to justice. It is through the dedication and professionalism of our law enforcement officers that crimes like this are solved, and people who commit criminal offenses are held accountable. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. We also have PA and DJ equipment. Some lights, yes, we have that covered too. You can come rent a PA and sound system, do your karaoke, and bring it back. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Broadcasting from the tallest tower in the city with that little red light on top. FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450. FM 1019, FM 100.5, WGNSradio.com. The Good Neighbor Network.
Don't miss the Rick Burgess Show weekdays 11 to 2 here on News Radio WGNS.
The Rick Burgess Show weekdays 11 to 2 on News Radio WGNS.
This is a breaking news alert from News Radio WGNS.
So we've got two stories going on right now to tell you about. One is Northwest Broad is really between Medical Center Parkway and the bridge over Broad. That area is closed because of an accident earlier this morning. MTE is working to put up a new power pole and get that restored, so that's going on. And out in the Christiana area, the missing zebra has been spotted this morning, roaming in a field near Christiana, according to the sheriff's office. And deputies are there with their drone camera. They've tracked the movement, actually got a video of the zebra. Now they're trying to corral the zebra, capture the zebra out there in the Christiana area. And authorities are mentioning that to safely capture, they need him to calm down a little bit. So right now, they're asking you to avoid this area in Christiana, and I'm assuming you're going to be able to tell where they're at out there. So that's the latest on Zebragate, or whatever you want to call it, this morning. That's breaking news for News Radio WGNS.
That brisket came from your cow, right?
Yep, raised her, named her, thanked her, and now she's dinner.
Rutherford County Farmers Market. There's something fresh every week. Tuesdays and Fridays, 7 to 1. At Lane Agri Park in Murfreesboro on John R. Rice Boulevard.
A look at the news, views, politics, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Listen each weekday morning at 9 o'clock for the roundtable here on News Radio WGNS.
FM 1019, FM 100.5, WGNSradio.com. The Good Neighbor Network.
This is Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station, FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, WGNS, Murfreesboro. A search for truth.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. During today's program, on our Call to Conviction segment, we will review a trial from the past. The trial involves the murder.
Catch up on the latest community news and events all before you hit your destination. The Rutherford Roundup. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts or visit WGNSradio.com.
Good morning, listeners, and thank you for joining us today on this episode of What's the Law? Today, we are going to be joined by some very special guests. We have four law students from various law schools across the state, and they're going to be telling you a little bit about themselves and introducing a segment of What's the Law? And today, I'm going to pass it over now to Cole Albright.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Colton Albright, and I'm a rising 2L student at Belmont Law. I'm originally from Dublin, Ohio, and I received my bachelor's degree in political science from Ohio University. I began law school with zero idea on which area of the law I would end up practicing in. But I've always had an interest in criminal law, and I've been enjoying gaining some valuable experience in that field so far this summer. Outside of work, I'm most likely hanging out with some friends, reading, cooking, and occasionally diving into new hobbies just to see what sticks.
Good morning. I'm Zach Willett, a rising second-year student at Belmont Law. I'm from right here in Murfreesboro, and I studied history at MTSU. I began law school with the hope of eventually practicing as a public defender, but here I am as an intern with the DA. My plan remains intact for now, but we'll see how much longer it takes for the charming group of attorneys with the 16th Judicial District to rub off on me. I'm a lifelong hockey player, a history buff, a fan of opera, and I make a mean braised beef. When I'm not reading and writing for law school, I like to read and write. With gratitude to the station and its listeners, here's Jenny.
Hi, my name is Jennifer LaRue. I'm originally from New York before I moved to Florida. I went to undergrad at the University of Florida where I studied political science, and now I'm a rising 2L at Vanderbilt Law. I first became interested in being a lawyer and specifically a prosecutor after I took a 7th grade civics field trip to our local courthouse to watch a round of mock trial. After that, I was in love and I continued doing mock trial all throughout undergrad, and I still do it today here at Vanderbilt Law. When I'm not studying at the library, I'm attempting to recreate an Italian dish from one of my Nona's recipe books.
Hey everyone, my name is Parker Gasway, and I'm a rising 3L at Belmont Law. I grew up in Smithfield, Tennessee, and I graduated from Lipscomb University in 2022. I'm interested in criminal law, which is why I'm here working with the district attorney's office. I decided to intern here because I wanted to gain valuable courtroom experience where I'll be able to participate in some court proceedings while under direct supervision thanks to my limited license. When I am not in class, I like staying busy, whether that means watching sports with friends or getting a workout in. I also really enjoy going to concerts and discovering new artists. No matter what I'm doing, I always enjoy learning more. That includes learning more about what the law is. With that, let's talk about Tennessee Code 3917-1307. Tennessee Code 3917-1307, Sections B and C, address the unlawful possession of firearms by individuals with certain prior convictions or under specific legal restrictions. In other words, in Tennessee, it is a felony offense for a convicted felon to possess a firearm. Under Section B, if a person has been convicted of a felony crime of violence, an attempt to commit a felony crime of violence, or a felony involving the use of a deadly weapon, it will be classified as a Class B felony. If a person has been convicted of a felony drug offense, it will be classified as a Class C felony. Finally, under Section C, it is an offense for a person who possesses a handgun and has been convicted of a felony, and this is a Class E felony. The types of felony classes can significantly change the punishments for these crimes. For instance, a Class A felony has the harshest punishments, while a Class E felony has the lightest punishments. For example, a Class B felony carries a range of 8 to 30 years in prison, although this depends on how many offenses a person has. For first-time offenders, a typical prison sentence would be about 7.2 years. Additionally, the maximum fine of a Class B felony is $25,000. Likewise, a Class C felony carries a sentence range of 3 to 15 years, and the maximum fine is $10,000. Finally, a Class E felony carries a sentence range of 1 to 6 years, and the maximum fine is $3,000. Additionally, there is an amendment that will take place on July 1st, 2025, that will make an offense to unlawfully possess firearm and handgun ammunition. This is outlined in Tennessee House Bill number 1093. Tennessee Code Annotated 3911-106 provides a definition for firearm and handgun. According to the statute, a firearm is any weapon designed to, or that can readily be converted to, expel a projectile by explosive action, including its frame or receiver, a muffler or silencer, or any destructive device, but does not include an antique firearm. A handgun is any firearm with a barrel length of less than 12 inches that is designed, made, or adapted to be fired with one hand. These statutes seem simple, right? Except the statute leaves so many questions open for interpretation. What happens when the previous felonies stem from out-of-state convictions? Does it matter if these convictions would have been felonies here in Tennessee? How should a defendant be indicted under the statute if they have violated multiple provisions of it by a single act? How does double jeopardy interact with those multiple indictments? I will now give the floor to my fellow interns to answer these questions.
First, what happens when previous felonies come from out-of-state convictions? If the person possesses a firearm under Section 3911-106, then they must have committed a crime of violence or a felony drug offense. Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3917-1301 provides a specific list of offenses that qualify as crimes of violence. These include aggravated assault, aggravated robbery, and other serious felonies. With an out-of-state crime of violence conviction, Tennessee courts must determine if the elements of the out-of-state offense match the elements of a Tennessee offense classified as a crime of violence. In the case of State v. Vick, the court emphasized the necessity of comparing the elements of the out-of-state offense to Tennessee law. Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3911-110 defines a felony as any violation of law punishable by 1 year or more of confinement. The definition of felony determines whether an out-of-state conviction constitutes a felony drug offense. Regardless of the classification system used in the other state, courts in Tennessee apply this definition to see if the out-of-state conviction qualifies as a felony drug offense. For example, in State v. Smith, the court held the definition of felony under Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3911-110 controls the determination of whether an out-of-state conviction qualifies as a felony drug offense. In that case, the out-of-state conviction was from Indiana, and their state law may punish the crime for up to 3 years, so the defendant's prior conviction was a felony drug offense under Tennessee law. Additionally, Tennessee Code Annotated 4035-106 says, if a felony is not named in Tennessee law, the elements are used to determine where it would be classified in Tennessee law. If the person is unlawfully possessing a handgun and not a firearm, they would just need to have a felony according to Section 3917-1307. And so Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3911-110's definition of felony would apply.
Sometimes a person suspected of unlawful possession of a firearm has several prior felony convictions. The question arises, can the state charge such a defendant with multiple counts of unlawful possession of a firearm based on just one instance of possession? In State v. Hart, the Tennessee Court of Criminal Appeals for the Western Division considered exactly that scenario. The defendant there had three prior felony drug convictions and got caught possessing a gun. The state charged him with three counts of unlawful possession of a firearm, one for each prior felony. The court held that the state may charge a defendant with a separate count of unlawful possession for each prior felony, as each prior felony represents an alternative theory by which they could secure a conviction. But that doesn't mean the state can actually punish the defendant for each of those charges. To reach that decision, the Hart Court determined the unit of prosecution under the relevant statute. That just means they had to figure out what the legislature intended to be a single unit of conduct that corresponds to a single punishment. The court ruled that the legislature intended that defendants receive one punishment per instance of unlawful possession of a firearm, rather than per prior felony. Thus, the three charges had to merge into one to avoid trying the defendant multiple times for the same criminal act. The legal term for this is double jeopardy. Because the unit of prosecution was per instance of possession instead of per prior felony, and the defendant was only accused of one instance of possession, punishing them multiple times for that one instance would constitute double jeopardy. So, to reiterate, the state can bring multiple charges for unlawful possession according to the number of applicable felonies on the defendant's record, but they can only convict according to the number of distinct instances of unlawful possession with which the defendant is charged.
To bring it all together, in Tennessee, it is a felony offense for a convicted felon to possess a firearm. What counts as a felony when considering out-of-state convictions depends on whether the prior offense was a crime of violence or a felony drug offense, unless the firearm in question was a handgun. Crimes of violence utilize Tennessee statutory definitions, while felony drug convictions look to the state where the prior conviction took place to determine the length of incarceration possible under that state's own laws. If under the state's laws where the prior drug felony was committed, the defendant could have been incarcerated for a period longer than 1 year, then the defendant had committed a drug felony for the purposes of the statute. Additionally, a single instance of possession can lead to multiple indictments as long as there is an independent theory or circumstance that the defendant could have been indicted on for that single act of possession. For instance, a defendant could be indicted for a Class B, C, and E felony for a single act of possession as long as they possess the requisite prior felonies, for example, a crime of violence and drug-related felony, while illegally possessing a handgun. And finally, if the defendant is convicted on multiple counts for that single act of possession, those lesser-included counts must merge into the highest-level felony conviction. The legal reasoning behind these steps comes from a combination of both statutory language and case law demonstrating the interpretation and application of that statutory language.
Get your Good Neighbor events to us in writing 2 weeks before they occur. We'll put them on the radio and the internet. WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's restaurant. Demas's has had a bar when we opened 35 years ago, and we've done the exact same thing with our bar menu that we've done with our food menu. We get higher quality items, higher quality cocktails. Again, some people just want a drink with their meal, where they might be able to get a drink to complement their meals. You need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street. We really focus on value.
Big benefits at Adams Place.
We have a driver who's here from 8 to 4. He will take you anywhere you need to go.
That's Charlotte Gardner.
It's really a big plus getting around when you do not drive.
Move to Adams Place and leave the driving to us.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
On Memorial.
Across from Walmart.
Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
As we end our...
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in any upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. I first want to take a moment to thank our four interns for coming in today and making our presentation, Cole, Jennifer, Parker, and Zach. Y'all did an excellent job, and we're happy to have you in the office. All right. On September 27th of 2021, Irwin Odom's mother called 911 and reported that Irwin Odom had shot and killed his wife, Toni Odom. Detective Ty Downing with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department has been assigned as the lead investigator. At the conclusion of the investigation, Mr. Odom was charged with first-degree murder. On November the 7th of 2022, a preliminary hearing was held, and the General Sessions Court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. In December of 22, the grand jury indicted Mr. Odom for first-degree murder, and on November the 8th of last year, Mr. Odom entered a plea of guilty to second-degree murder and received a 27-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Odom was represented by counsel Mr. Josh Crane, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Sarah Davis and Dana Miner. On May 18th of 2022, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a call of shots fired at the tennis courts on campus at Middle Tennessee State University. Officers responded and located two gunshot victims, Mr. Hassani Brewer, who later died from his injuries, and Mr. Xavion Amos, who survived. Detective David Miller was assigned as the lead investigator. From witnesses on the scene and with the assistance of MTSU security cameras, detectives were able to identify several young men who entered the tennis courts just after the graduation ceremony for Riverdale High School students. Two of the individuals, Mr. Brewer and Mr. Amos, had agreed to fight. The fight was observed by four other males, including Mr. Dante Martin, a friend of Mr. Amos. During the course of the fight, Mr. Martin pulled a handgun and began to fire into the fight, striking Mr. Brewer multiple times, as well as hitting Mr. Amos. Subsequently, Mr. Martin was charged as a juvenile with first-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. The state petitioned the juvenile court to transfer Mr. Martin to adult court and be allowed to prosecute Mr. Martin as an adult. A hearing was held, and the juvenile court agreed to the transfer. In December of 2023, Mr. Martin was indicted for first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon, possession of a firearm on school property, employment of a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, and reckless endangerment. On March 20th of this year, Mr. Martin entered pleas of guilty to second-degree murder and aggravated assault, receiving a total sentence of 15 years to serve in the custody of TDOC. Mr. Martin was represented by counsel, Mr. Jacob Findley, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. On May 31st of 2021, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a call regarding a vehicle on fire and reported gunshots. Officers on scene located a burning vehicle with at least one occupant inside. The occupant was later identified as 18-year-old Taya Bryant. Shortly after responding to the call, authorities were notified of two young males that were in the vehicle with Ms. Bryant at the time. Detectives were sent to interview the males at the scene. Crime scene technicians located multiple casings from different firearms. The area was canvassed, and officers were able to locate video footage from a resident's home security system. Additional video footage was later discovered at a gas station down the road from the shooting. An autopsy revealed that Ms. Bryant died as a result of a gunshot wound to the head, although her body was extensively burned as a result of the vehicle catching fire. Through interviews of the two males, police learned one of the males had an argument with his girlfriend, Donzilla Hamler. As a result of the argument, the male took her phone and refused to give it back. Miss Bryant and Miss Hamler were friends, and when Miss Bryant learned of the situation, she was able to contact Miss Hamler in an attempt to return her phone. However, Miss Hamler had gone to her brother, Dontorius Hamler, and told him that her boyfriend stole her phone and assaulted her. Mr. Hamler got at least one or two more other unknown males to go with him in Miss Hamler's vehicle to meet the boyfriend, who was with Miss Bryant and the other male. Video footage shows Ms. Hamler's car pull into the gas station, park, and then back out of the parking spot and leave the gas station. Ms. Hamler's vehicle was then followed by Ms. Bryant's vehicle. Shortly thereafter, home security video shows the two vehicles traveling down Leaf Avenue. Gunshots are heard, and crime scene reconstruction showed that the lead vehicle, Ms. Hamler's, opened fire on Ms. Bryant's vehicle, striking the vehicle multiple times and Ms. Bryant once in the head. The video shows the two males running away on foot. Witnesses from earlier in the night placed Ms. Hamler and Mr. Hamler inside the vehicle 30 minutes to an hour before the shooting, along with one to two other individuals. Both Mr. and Ms. Hamler were charged as juveniles with first-degree murder of Ms. Bryant and the attempted first-degree murder of two males. The state once again petitioned the juvenile court to transfer both Hamlers to adult court. However, prior to a hearing, both Mr. and Ms. Hamler agreed to be transferred to adult court without a hearing. In February of 2023, both Mr. and Ms. Hamler were indicted on charges of second-degree murder, along with many various other felonies. The Hamlers were represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel and Ms. Jennifer Fiola. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. After consulting with Ms. Bryant's family, an agreement was reached on February 20th of 2025. Both Hamlers entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to second-degree murder and two counts of attempted second-degree murder. They each received an effective total sentence of 10 years to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. The investigation continues as to the identity of the remaining assailants. On April 24th of 2021, officers on patrol heard shots fired and responded to 1621 Middle Tennessee Boulevard. Officers found Ms. Shakur Ali, who had been shot and later died from his injuries. Apollo Cantrell was identified as the shooter by multiple witnesses, and a video security camera recorded the murder. Mr. Cantrell is seen shooting Mr. Ali and running away from the scene. Afterwards, Mr. Cantrell fled the state. Detective Richard Presley with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator, and through cooperation with the state of Iowa, Mr. Cantrell was apprehended by Iowa State Police after he initially attempted to evade capture in a motor vehicle. Mr. Cantrell was extradited back to Tennessee on charges of second-degree murder and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. In May of 2023, he was indicted for second-degree murder, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon, and many other felonies. Mr. Cantrell was represented by counsel, Mr. David Clark, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. On February 18th of this year, Mr. Cantrell entered a plea of guilty to second-degree murder, aggravated assault, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. He was sentenced to a total effective sentence of 30 years to serve in the Department of Corrections. On February the 27th of 2023, deputies with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office responded to a business on Halls Hill Pike in reference to an armed subject attacking and attempting to shoot several employees. The employees fought back and were able to subdue the subject, later identified as Eric Buchanan. Mr. Buchanan had been banned from entering the business a few hours earlier. Mr. Buchanan returned with a semi-automatic pistol, walked through the front door, immediately struck an employee in the head with the pistol, and then pointed the pistol at the owner that banned him and pulled the trigger. Fortunately, the firearm malfunctioned and did not fire, but audio surveillance equipment caught the entire incident, and the audio caught the chilling sound of the click when the trigger was pulled while the gun was pointed directly at the owner's head. At that moment, several individuals jumped into physically restrain Mr. Buchanan until law enforcement arrived. Detective Monica Fonseca was assigned as the lead investigator. After interviewing witnesses and reviewing audio and video recordings, Mr. Buchanan was charged with attempted first-degree murder, aggravated assault, and other felonies. A preliminary hearing was held in General Sessions Court on March 23rd of 2023, and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. In May of 23, the grand jury returned an indictment for all charges. A trial was held in October of last year, and on October 24th of last year, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Buchanan as charged. On January 31st of this year, Circuit Court Judge Jimmy Turner sentenced Mr. Buchanan to a total effective sentence of 120 years to serve in the Department of Corrections custody. As a career offender, Mr. Buchanan has at least 8 prior felony convictions, several for violent offenses. Mr. Buchanan was represented by counsel, Ms. Jennifer Fiola, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Will Dement. On December 1st of 2021, officers at the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to 1421 Old Las Casas Pike after the body of Shanna Gibson was discovered. Miss Gibson had died from an apparent gunshot wound to the head. Detective Chris Houck of the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as lead investigator. The victim's boyfriend, Myron Jenkins, was missing from the residence but was later located at St. Thomas Rutherford after his father had attempted to have him admitted. While on scene, officers located a black firearm outside by the driveway. Detectives interviewed Mr. Jenkins, who attempted to feign insanity. Mental health experts determined that Mr. Jenkins was competent and that the defense of insanity was not supported. At the conclusion of Detective Houck's investigation, Myron Jenkins was charged with first-degree murder. On April 25th of this year, a jury of Mr. Jenkins' peers convicted Mr. Jenkins as charged of first-degree murder and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Mr. Jenkins is currently incarcerated at the Rutherford County Adult Detention Center. He was represented by counsel, Mr. Charles Ward, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Sarah Davis and Dana Miner. A trial is scheduled to begin on July 14th of this year on Alistair Jennings on allegations of first-degree murder and aggravated assault resulting in death. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Ben Wetzel, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on July 14th of this year on Mikayo Boyd and Montavis Guy Jr. on allegations of first-degree murder, attempted especially aggravated robbery, conspiracy to aggravated robbery, and possession of a weapon with intent to employ it during the commission of a felony offense. A trial is scheduled to begin on August the 11th of this year on Carmen Dela Cruz for allegations of second-degree murder and aggravated assault resulting in death. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Chris Fisher, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. A trial is scheduled to begin on October 22nd of this year on Key Anthony Williams for allegations of first-degree murder, attempted especially aggravated robbery, employing a weapon during the commission of a dangerous offense, and possession of a weapon by a convicted felon. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Ben Wetzel, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. And that will conclude this episode of our look inside the courts.
The monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio WGNS the first Friday of each month.
As we end our program today, we thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Jennings Jones and Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.